Believe it or not, it really is. It is springtime in Northfield, Minnesota. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. It was a great weekend. I spent a little time driving around town, and people were out raking. People were out enjoying the outdoors at the various breweries here in town. And I'll tell you what, it was an absolutely lazy weekend for me. I didn't accomplish anything except maybe half a book. It is Monday morning, and it is May 7th, and the year is 2018. And the downtown streets are busy in Northfield, and we're going to be busy here in the studios. I have a guest in studio that I am going to murder her name, and so I'm going to let her introduce herself so I can seem like maybe I'll get it right.
My name's Lakshmi Dedi, and I'm very excited to be here with you today, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. Lakshmi.
I always tell people it's like lock and key. Shh, it's me.
Lakshmi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that a name you came up with yourself, or was that given to you?
My dad is from India.
India?
And Lakshmi is actually a really common name there. It's like Sally or Sue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lakshmi.
Yeah.
Do you have a nickname?
Lala.
Lala.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're in Lala Land, ladies and gentlemen. This is great. Lakshmi Sylvie Dedi.
You got it.
Okay. And Dedi is a name that we're familiar with here at KYMN because we had a gentleman that worked here at Kim Radio a couple of decades ago by now by the name of Christian Dedi. Does that sound familiar?
You know, given that my dad's from India and my mom's from South America, I can't imagine I'm related to someone from Northfield, Minnesota. But you never know. We live in a globalized world.
Okay. And I have to say that I feel we're going to have a very interesting conversation because, number one, we're a generation or five apart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from the 40s. And you're from the 90s? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah? 90s, yeah.
Wow, holy cow. I was telling her that I usually use bumper music for the year they graduated from high school, my guess. And you said 2009 you got?
Yep.
Okay. And I'm thinking, well, I don't have any 2009 bumper music. And so I went and I picked the year that you were born, which does not coincide with normal in regards to born, graduate, you know, like 18 years old.
Mm.
So you must have graduated early.
I went to high school for 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
I was pretty much like, this is great, but I want to get to the big games. You know, I want to be in college already. So I just kind of pushed through and took classes from 7 in the morning to 9 o'clock at night for a year and a half. So I could graduate in 2 years.
Wow.
And I just placed out. You can just take tests now, where if you're smart enough, you just don't even have to take the class if you can pass the test.
Really? I wish they would have had that in my day. That would have been embarrassing. So what I do here is I generally start with who you are and what you do, and then we talk about that for a while. Then we go to who's your mom and dad. Then we go to who's your grandma and grandpa. Then we go to anything else that we just go off on tangents when something strikes me interesting. So your answers can be long. Okay.
Well, good, because I'm a little long-winded usually.
Well,
I'm a chatty Cathy. I love it. I always say, if my mouth's not moving, my heart's not beating.
All right. Well, I like that because, quite frankly, I like to ask the question and sit back and listen to the answer. And I've had some people that do the yes and no and the nodding of the head, and that's pretty hard to talk for 2 hours like that.
Absolutely.
But I've also had people on. I have a guest that was on twice so far, and he's not done. But when I ask him a question, he's got great stories to go with it, and I just sit back and listen because I feel everybody's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the politicians and the TV people and the movie people, but I like everyday people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea what you do for a living, And how did we get in contact with?
I was at an expo. My business, Be Free, had a table at the Longevity Expo, and one of your radio friends interviewed me there.
That would have been Ned.
Ned. He was a wonderful gentleman. He said, "Wow, you're really interesting. You should get on the radio." And I was like, "I love talking, so happy to."
Okay, that's how it was. Thank you, Ned, for leading me to this young lady. And we are going to start our conversation now. What do you do?
So I am an entrepreneur, and I own my own business called Be Free, and I just partnered with another business called The Coaching Hour. So Be Free does coaching and organizing. I work a lot with businesses and individuals, creating systems and structures for them to live their best life. So the premise of the business is it's all about clean space, clear mind. We know if you have a messy room, you have a messy mind, right? Or if you're professional and you're spending 30 minutes a day looking for an email or looking for that file, you're wasting a lot of time every week. So people will hire me to come in, get them set up, get them systemized, get them organized in their mind and their body and their spirit in their space, and then live their best life.
Is that kind of like a life coach?
It is similar to life coaching, yeah.
Okay.
I would say it's very solutions focused. So what are you doing that's already working, and how can we grow and build on that? You know, I think therapy is a lot of like talking about the past, which is important, but I think coaching is more looking at the future of like, okay, this happened, we know that, how can we best navigate it, and how can we build your skills, not work on strengthening your weaknesses?
Now, I have been in offices where the desk is cluttered, and there are files and stacks of manila folders all over the floor around the desk, and they happen to be very well-educated and very accomplished individuals, and I'm thinking mostly of attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in attorneys' offices where their desks are clean and everything's in order, and then I've been in them that there's just like, holy cow, how do they do it? And they do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
So how much better would they do if they didn't have all that clutter? Because they could turn around and pull a file off the floor.
Yeah, know where it is. So I work a lot with attorneys, so I love that you use that example. And, you know, when I'm connecting with attorneys and kind of explaining what I do and why they should hire me, I say, you know, how much do you bill an hour? Sometimes it's $600 an hour. How much time do you spend every week or every day looking for a file? So 30 minutes, 5 days a week, that's 2.5 hours, right? So you're wasting $1,500 almost.
No, they're making $1,500.
But, you know, how much more could they be getting done? How much more could they be, how many more clients could they be taking on if they could increase their bandwidth? And it also goes to different minds think differently. You know, I was an educator. I have a master's certificate in education. I taught 8th grade. And so I learned how different minds work, right? And I learned how to change my lesson plans for people with different types of learning abilities, or people who are learning English or as their third or fourth or fifth language, and then also just the, you know, really advanced learners. Like, each type of learner has to learn a different way. Well, same with organizing. What's organized to me and what's organized to you, Wayne, is going to be totally different.
Oh, yes.
And it doesn't matter if I think it looks good, because it has to be functional for you. So, you know, my attorneys that have their desks stacked with papers, and they're like, okay, don't even start in here. I want you to start in the supply closet, which is like the room they're never in. That doesn't matter. But what they're doing is they're building trust with me. They're seeing how effective I am. Am I just going to make them throw everything away, or am I going to work with them and figure out how their brain works and then find a system that works for that kind of brain, which is what I do.
Well, one of the things I imagine you've experienced would be clients saying to you, after battling with you for a while, when everything's done and in place, that they feel like the world is lifted off their shoulders. They just feel more calm and collected.
Absolutely. And that's where the coaching comes in. Because, yeah, I can just come in and move your space around and it'll look great and you'll feel good. But if you want to maintain it, if you want to keep it that way, you've got to do some work, right? And so oftentimes people will like cry. Like, I just had this attorney where she cried when I left her home office, and she's like, I just every day have been so bogged down by this stuff, and I feel so much lighter. And my response to her was, Well, you are. I just took about 150 pounds worth of stuff out of your office. You know what I mean? Like, you just lost 150 pounds. So there's an emotional component to our stuff, even if it's just files. You know, it weighs on us. Our stuff weighs on us.
Well, like guilt feeling. Like, I got to get to that. I'm going to get that done tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, oh, I haven't done it yet, and what does that say about me, and all the story. Or, you know, I think for women, too, especially now that more women are working, but they're also trying to keep a home. And so it's like, well, my mom kept a perfect house, so I have to do that. Yeah, but your mom wasn't working as an attorney 50, 60 hours a week, you know, and trying to maintain an entire household by herself and raising two kids. So giving people grace, you know, an understanding of, like, we are doing the best we can with the tools we have and skills that we have right now in this moment.
Well, without mentioning names, why don't you tell me about a client that is a perfect example of your help. You know what you're doing? You're multitasking right now.
I was finishing that post, so now everyone knows how to listen to me right now.
Okay. So now tell the story about a client that fought you all the way and the end result and the type of business, not the name of the individual.
Yeah.
Kind of give us a story.
Oh, yeah. I got so many good ones, Wayne. I love that you're asking this. So oftentimes wives hire me for their husbands, which is always a great idea because it's I've just learned how to work really well with men, and I've also learned how to work with people that don't necessarily want to work with me. But it's one of those things where it's like, well, my wife says I have to. So, I mean, one example would be this gentleman, an attorney. Like I said, a lot of my clients are attorneys. Home office has spread to be like the entire basement, which they've refinished into like what could be a really beautiful exercise area and second living room. And it's very nice down there. However, his home office spread and contaminated each of the spaces. So it was pretty much like a home basement with papers everywhere. And the wife hired me, and she's like, look, I just can't handle it, and he won't listen to me, and I can't touch his stuff, so you have to come in. And then as soon as I met him, he's like, well, just so you know, I'm not interested in having you touch any of my stuff. And I mean, you're here because my wife hired you, but we're not going to do anything. It was like, all right, great to meet you. But then, you know, after talking with me and working with me, again, we started in the least emotionally attached area. So we started in the storage closet. And we're going through things that neither him or his wife has used in probably 30 years. Literally, like, their kids' basketball. Their kids are now in their 40s and have their own kids. So, you know, going through all this stuff. And then we build rapport and we build trust. And he sees that I'm not a control freak. I'm not out to throw any of his stuff away. And that I can hold space for whatever is coming up, you know? Because your stuff, your physical stuff, is a great segue into your emotional stuff. And that's why I'm so glad I can pair the organizing with coaching, because a client who maybe didn't deal with the grief of their parents passing and then just shoved all their parents' stuff in a storage room and doesn't want to deal with it, and then we have to go through all that stuff. Well, we're not just processing your mom's childhood photo albums. We're processing the death and loss of your mother and maybe the strings that were attached to that death, like you weren't able to be there, or you and her were actually in a huge fight and hadn't spoken in years, or your siblings made it really challenging after she passed and it became all about money and not about the life that was loved and cherished. So kind of working through all of that with this gentleman, all the things that come up as you go through family memories and pictures, and then finally we're at the point where we can just now start dealing with the technology in his office. So we're still not even totally done with the process, but we've consolidated all of the office into the office out of four different rooms, and we get together about every 2 weeks, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to be together. It's wonderful to work with someone that, again, met me with so much resistance and disinterest and now is like, when you coming over? I miss seeing you, you know?
And what do you do when you come back every 2 weeks?
So the goal is to get that office really organized, but it took time to build the rapport and build the trust. And okay, we started in the less emotional areas, like the storage room and all that. So it usually starts with some conversation. How's it been going in your new space? Have you been able to find everything you need? If not, what? What's working in your space? What's frustrating in your space? And what are those to-dos that you still haven't gotten around to? So I'm an accountability person. That's where the coaching comes in. You said you were going to get those files scanned so that you could shred them. Have you done that yet? If not, I'm either going to do it right now with you, or we're going to, you know, figure out another plan because this isn't happening. So I think it's a great way for especially solopreneurs, people that work on their own, like attorneys and, you know, contractors and consultants, to have some accountability. Because when you're your own boss and you're doing all the stuff, it can be really easy to shove things under the rug you don't want to deal with. But that rug is getting harder and harder to walk on and lumpier and full of stuff underneath it.
We're, my guest this morning is by the name of Lashish. You know, correct me every time.
Lakshmi.
Lakshmi.
Lakshmi, yeah.
Sylvie Dady. Mm-hmm. Is that like a husband-wife name? Or
no,
Sylvie's
I know it's
hyphenated,
so it's confusing. But yeah, Sylvie's the middle name. So
okay. Lakshmi.
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 You got it.
You know, it reminds me of a daisy.
Huh. I like that. I've never thought about that before.
Well, she locks me. She locks me not.
I'm going to start using that. That's so
I
got to
say that we have a client called the Quarterback Club here in Northfield. I don't expect you to tell me you've been there before. But anyhow, it's been here for 50 years.
Mm.
And it's called the Quarterback Club. And they serve breakfast till 10 o'clock every morning, Monday through Saturday. Not Sundays, so the nonprofits can have their pancake feeds, etc.
Mm.
And they make the most delicious roasted chicken you'll ever taste. In addition to that, it seems like yesterday, but I think it's a couple of years now, they've added baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness just oozing all over them.
Yum.
In the shape and taste of the best barbecue ribs that fall off the bone. They are delicious. Stop in today for lunch, dinner, and, of course, breakfast today or tomorrow. That's the QB, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield. As a matter of fact, I drove by there this weekend because we had a thing called the Northfield Experience. And the Northfield community, along with St. Olaf College and Carleton College, put together a Northfield Experience, and they had dancers and singers dancing outside the old depot behind the Quarterback Club. They had dancers on the graves out at the Northfield Cemetery and singers.
Wow.
And they had performances at the Nag Theater, and they did the Grand Theater. It was a great weekend called the Northfield Experiment, and I hope a lot of my listeners have had the opportunity to go there. It was really a lot of fun.
Sounds wonderful.
We're going to be back in just about 30 seconds here on KYMN.
Girls Night Out is back. Ladies, call your friends and head to downtown Northfield on Friday, May 11th for the 11th annual Girls Night Out, presented by the Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce. This will be a great night of dining, deals, and drawings at downtown shops and restaurants. The festivities kick off at 4 o'clock and go well into the evening. Stop into Girls Night Out sponsors to register for your chance to win $475 in Chamber Bucks.
Girls Night Out is proud to be sponsored by Froggy Bottoms, Swag, The Measuring Cup, and Club Tiki Boutique, along with many other fine sponsors.
Baby, baby. That's the title of the tune by Amy Grant, the number 10 tune in the year my guest was born. And I know she doesn't remember it, but have you ever heard of Amy Grant and the song Baby Baby?
Not Baby Baby, but Amy Durant for sure. I'm an old soul, so.
Okay. What are you pouring there?
I'm a tea drinker, and if you can't hear, I have a bit of a scratchy throat, so I'm working on getting rid of that.
Oh, why? It sounds great.
Thank you. I was hoping I'd be back for my radio voice, but.
Yeah. All right, my guest this morning, once again, is, here we go,
Lakshmi.
Lakshmi, Lakshmi.
Yeah, you got it.
I'll
think
get
of
it.
L-A-X-M-I. That's an easy way to think
Lakshmi.
About it.
Lakshmi, okay. How about if I just call you Miss Dady?
That works.
Okay. Well, Miss Dady, it's 22 minutes after 9 o'clock on KYMN Radio. Miss Dady is an entrepreneur. And I wonder if they have a male and a female, a gender to entrepreneur.
Maybe in Spanish, probably, where they have masculine and feminine verbs and nouns and everything. Yeah, probably maybe in like Italian and German, but not in English that I know of. It's just entrepreneur. And then the company I work for, called the Coaching Hour, we always use the term solopreneur.
Okay. Coaching Hour. That's the next thing we're going to address, all right?
Sounds good.
And then we're going to address you. And I have to ask this. Do you watch Shark Tank?
Sometimes, yeah. I love it because I'm in business and I'm thinking, would I invest in that? And actually, there's a live Shark Tank going on in Minneapolis next weekend at the Powderhorn Community Center, and I'm excited to go see that because it's always fun to see what the entrepreneurs in our community are coming up with.
What are they calling it?
They're calling it the Powderhorn Shark Tank.
Oh, I wonder if they had to get permission to do that from the show.
I wonder if they didn't get permission and we're exposing them now.
Well, we do. We have a huge celebration here in the fall called Defeat of Jesse James Days because that's where he made his last robbery right here in Northfield in 1876. I'll tell you more later. But here's the deal. We put together a soapbox derby. Do you know what that is? Probably not.
Mm-mm.
You're so young.
I think about, like, when I hear soapbox, I think of the Boy Scouts and those little cars that I would help my brother build.
Yeah, that they can get it and drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, or steer. Yes, that's what it is. And it's a national event. And we started our own local one, and we got a cease and desist letter from an attorney saying we cannot use the term soapbox.
Who owns it? Boy Scouts?
No, the Soapbox Derby Association, I suppose. Hmm. Yeah. So anyhow, just throw that out. Let's talk coaching hour. So now you get an hour with each individual during their workday at home?
You know, that's what you'd think, right, with it saying the coaching hour. So the coaching hour is this really innovative and amazing coaching business that helps a lot of, you know, business coaches, solopreneurs, people that are working on their own, creatives, consultants, those kinds of things. And it helps them get to six figures because, as we know, 50% of first-year businesses fail. And most solopreneurs, meaning people working for themselves, by themselves, or businesses with under 10 people, oftentimes struggle to make that six-figure or more mark. And so the coaching hour helps people get there. We have a club called the Six Figure Success Club, and we have training programs. And it's one of those things where it's like, if you do all of these things, and we hold you accountable, and we help you, and there's different modules on your marketing, your packaging, all the different aspects of business, and if you follow these instructions, you will be a six-figure business.
All right. And what are most of these businesses? Are they like mom-and-pop operations, or are they like, you know, for example, this is an independently owned and operated radio station.
Yeah.
And it has been since, well, it'll be 50 years old in September. And it was once sold to an organization, a group, a corporate, mm-hmm. and they lasted like 2 years. And they didn't know how to operate an independently owned and operated, well, it was because it wasn't independently mm-hmm. owned. And now Jeff Johnson, along with his wife, Terry, operate the place. And they are doing well. And I know that it's a tough haul mm-hmm. to own your own business and to jump into the six figures. It's got to be 60% profit to make it.
Yeah, that's a good point with how taxes work. Absolutely.
So, and you need income for your business and for your family,
mm-hmm.
and it can be pretty rough going. $100,000 sounds like a lot, but it really isn't sometimes when you're paying rent.
Absolutely.
And all the other things.
Yeah, and so we use the term six figures because, I mean, six figures could be 500,000, right? Yeah. I mean, six figures is just six
yeah.
figures. You know, we work with all types of businesses. It's really fun to work with businesses that have been around for a while, and then they finally get to a point where they're like, okay, I want to grow. I want to invest in my business to take it to that next step because what I'm doing is getting me by, or it's enough, or it's working, but I know it could be working a lot better, right? And so, you know, we work with a variety of businesses from independent consultants and contractors and creatives to people that provide, you know, in-home care for elderly. Like, it's a wide range of people and types of businesses, but it's the specific type of person is the solopreneur or the entrepreneur, you know, that wants to take that leap and build their business on the next level.
Well, I interviewed a young lady many years ago, And I'm diabetic, and only a certified nurse can clip your toenails. You can't go to one of these places that do nails.
Yeah, because your skin is...
I mean, yeah, you don't want cuts because healing on the lower extremities is hard if you're diabetic. So she started a business called Twinkle Toes, and she was just a nervous wreck on the air. But she has built that into a pretty darn good business now and busy all the time. But she made home calls and did her thing, and KYMN and word of mouth got her a lot of clients, and she has now other people working for her.
Love it.
So that's just one of them that I can think of. And there are many up and down the street of Northfield.
Yeah, exactly. So she would be an awesome client for the Coaching Hour, someone that is growing their business, right, wants to grow it even more. And what I've learned as a business owner is, like, I can't wear every hat, you know. We all try, I think, entrepreneurs, we try to be the accountant, the secretary, the marketing, the CFO, the CEO, the COO. And although we can do that for so long, at a certain point when your business grows, it's like, okay, I need to automate. I need to create systems that are in place. This is where my organization comes into the Coaching Hour. I need to create systems so my social media posts are just automatically going out, you know, so my people that are contacting me, they can automatically book an appointment with me online without me having to open up my calendar and communicate back and forth, right? So there's all these aspects of business that can be enhanced when we stop trying to wear every hat, especially with technology. I mean, it's amazing now. You can have a computer secretary that does a great job.
Mm-hmm. What is your location on the internet? You know, the you don't have to say www.
Yeah, it's thecoachinghour.com.
That's it.
Yeah, thecoachinghour.com. Yep, all one word.
Small letters?
Yep, you got it. Super easy. Thecoachinghour.com.
And what about Be Free?
BeFreeToday.com.
Is it
and
B
it's
dash?
The letter B, the word free.
All
today.com.
Connected?
All connected, all one word, all lowercase. And I chose the letter B, free, because I want people to be able to fill that in, right? So it could be for you. After you work with me, you might feel beautiful. You might feel bountiful. You might feel brilliant. And so I didn't choose B-E, which is what a lot of people think, because I wanted it to be more ambiguous and
it's easier.
Yeah, there you go.
It's on the internet.
Exactly.
BeFree.com. One of the things that I'm going to talk about myself now, and folks know I do that frequently.
Please.
I have a garage full of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a desk full of stuff, and stuff in boxes, paperwork around the desk. And every time I look at it, I got to clean that up.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife quit complaining about it. And
how many years ago did she quit complaining about it?
A couple, for sure, yeah. And I don't want to throw things away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know, someday I want to take one of them. I have those big boxes that retailers in clothing use to put their dresses and snap them closed.
Mm-hmm.
I have like 10 of them, and it's got different types of stuff, and it's all in the garage. And I envision someday that my wife and my daughter and my granddaughter are going to want to sit around and pull those boxes out and let me go through it piece by piece and tell them the stories on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize now that I don't think that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really probably only interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, well, why don't I go through all that stuff and then throw away the stuff that that was a nice memory. I'll throw that away. We'll never think about it the rest of my life because that picture or whatever it is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you help people like me?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I get to be that person for a lot of people. Like, I want to share the story of this shirt that I got in Hawaii or this hat that I got when I was serving in the Vietnam War, you know. I want to share that story one more time before I let go of this thing. And I also don't throw anything away to the best of my ability. So I repurpose, donate, give to specific nonprofits as much as possible. And I've had quite a few older clients whose suits don't necessarily apply for wearing today, you know, like suits from the 70s, but I can give that fabric to a local shelter that will take the wool of those suits and make beautiful quilts for, you know, homeless children. So I find these really innovative ways of repurposing people's stuff so that they get to know that it gets to live on in another way and it doesn't have to go into a landfill. And someone else actually gets to enjoy their treasured item.
That includes trophies, plaques, you know, letters of recommendation.
That's a tough one. With the paperwork, we scan it, and then you have it digitally, and you don't have to worry about it. But the plaques, I haven't thought of a good way of repurposing that other than when I can find one of those people that makes art out of junk, I try to give them as much as I possibly can. You know what I mean? Like people that'll make funky garden sculptures and all that kind of stuff. So that's a really good point, though. But, and I love what you said about, I want to get around to it because you want to look through it again for your own.
Yeah.
Oh, I got this there and this is that.
Yeah. But I assume that you charge by the hour.
By the hour or by the project.
Okay. But for my case, it would be by the hour. Okay. I would assume.
It just depends.
Okay.
If I prefer to come and look at the space, and that way people can get a guesstimate of how much it's going to cost in total, you know. So I can I have all these rules for my business. Like I have to see the space before I bid the job, and you know, the person has got to commit to being with me and working with me at least 4 hours per room, because it's just easier to go through someone's stuff when they're there. And every time I break the rules that I create for my business, I'm reminded of why I have the rule. So like bidding a space before I see it, oftentimes people will be like, oh, it's, you know, 4 feet by 5 feet, small laundry room. And then I get there and they didn't tell me that it was filled to the ceiling with stuff and you can't even walk inside of it. And it's actually connected to the garage, which is overflowing. And I'm like, oh, man, I shouldn't have bid this job without seeing it.
And in my case, for other people that have the same situation, it would be like having somebody go through your memory.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to say, ooh, wow, that's, you know, and then toss it. That's what I'm thinking a lot of people in my age category have. They have a lot of memories in their house, in their attic, in their garage, and not necessarily nobody to share them with, just that the interest isn't going to be that great by most standards. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a big-time author or something like that, that's different. All right, moving along here at 9:34 on 1080 Radio. We are going to take a break, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
This is David Ludischer of Grundhoffer & Ludischer, Attorneys at Law. Marv and I, and the best legal staff anywhere, are pleased to introduce you to the newest members of our legal team, Jennifer Novak. Jennifer grew up in Lonsdale. She was previously a law clerk to several judges and has years of experience in social work. Jennifer joins Marv, me, and Robin Finke. Robin joined us last year. Robin has over 2 decades of experience, much of it as a trial attorney. And for the curious, yes, Marv still comes in every day.
Good morning time, 9:35 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota. Lakshmi is my guest. Did I get that right?
You got it.
Okay.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah. I wrote it phonetically.
Mm.
Lakshmi Dedi, and Sylvie in there too. Got to remind folks that on today's 15 with the author, Terry Knight talks with Kim Brophy about her book, Meet Your Dog, The Game-Changing Guide to Understanding Your Dog's Behavior. Kim is an award-winning certified canine behavior consultant and has developed a comprehensive framework known as LEGS, Learning, Environment, Genetics, and Self. Brophy talks about the myth of a magic method of good training. She discusses the serious jobs many dogs were bred for and how they conflict with our expectations, and also shares personal stories of some of her clients. That's at 11 o'clock this morning, 15 with the author, with Terry Knight. Lakshmi is my guest this morning on KYMN, and we're talking about Be Free. That's one of her entrepreneurial efforts, and also she has joined Coaching Hour, website that can benefit you when you contact them. So we'll get back to that and give your website and all that information later on, but I want to now get to know you. Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
Happy to.
Okay, Lakshmi, where were you born?
I was born in Portland, Oregon.
I know where that is.
West Coast.
The City of Roses.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
I was actually the Rose Festival princess.
You were?
So I've been in the parade multiple times, but on the float.
Well, guess what?
All the roses.
My wife runs a program for the Defeated Jesse James Day Committee called the Miss Defeated Jesse James Day's Ambassador Program, and encourages young women to participate. Three young women are chosen as ambassadors, and from there their education continues. And they learn all kinds of things, young women from 17, 18 on up. And have you ever heard of the Minneapolis Aquitennial?
No, I'm pretty new to the Twin Cities, so please educate me on that.
Wow. It's a big Minneapolis celebration for City of the Lakes.
Mm.
And it's called the Aquitennial. Mm. How about the Winter Carnival in St. Paul?
I wanted to go so badly this year, especially because I know they went all out for the Super Bowl. And I drove past it, but I didn't actually get a chance to go and admire all the ice sculptures. But it looked amazing.
Well, one of the ladies from Northfield was Queen of the Snows for the St. Paul Winter Carnival. And something that never happened in the 80 years of the Aquitennial, Julie's young ladies that represented Northfield were chosen back-to-back Queen of the Lakes.
Wow.
And they traveled to San Antonio, they traveled to Mexico, they traveled to Canada, they traveled to the Rose Bowl, they traveled, and they meet a lot of people. The networking is fantastic,
mm-hmm.
and the educational opportunities.
Oh, so. I love that. I want to connect with your wife, because the program that she's running sounds similar to the Rose Festival, in terms of, like, let's take young women, it's high school students, and you have to be voted in, and you have to be community service, good grades, involved in sports, involved in social activism, or, you know, student body stuff, community service, like I said before, and then you get to live on a tour bus for 8 weeks and travel around the state of Oregon promoting the Rose Festival.
Wow.
So it seems like you are doing something similar in Northfield, yeah. And I'd love to learn more about that later.
All those things that you mentioned are not demanded, are required, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, they just got Sunday. Do you remember Saturday, do you remember how beautiful it was?
Mm-hmm.
81 degrees.
Stunning.
And the spring is just over. The yard needs cleaning and all that planting and all those fun things you do.
Mm-hmm.
She took the ambassadors and went to Rochester and helped the Special Olympics,
mm-hmm.
where they had a track meet down there. So they spent their day contributing time and, of course, money, because you got to eat lunch, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, isn't it great how I can turn things around to me?
Well, and your community. I love how proud you are of your community and the things that you have going on here.
So you're born in Portland, Oregon. The thing that you don't know is that KYMN call letters came from KYMN Radio in Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses. They switched their format, and we were able to get their jingles at a very reasonable price, back when jingles were real popular for radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that happened.
Very cool. Yeah, we love radio in Portland.
So you're born in Portland. Did you grow up in Portland?
Yeah, I was really blessed to be there for most of my life. But what's different about me and compared to most people that grow up in the city they were born in is that we moved around all throughout the city. So we had three houses, two were rental properties, one was a house that we would live in, and we would kind of move between the three. As tenants would move out and a house would need to be updated or fixed, we'd move into that house while we're fixing it up. And then once it was ready to rent, we'd move back out to a different house, and we kind of cycled through. So I grew up in the same city, but in three very different neighborhoods, and I was constantly circling between those three.
So three different school buildings?
I went to 17 schools by the time I graduated high school at 16.
I thought I was going to be able to say I beat you, but I don't think I did 17.
Yeah.
That's a whole big bunch.
It was. It was wild.
You had to be able to communicate and make friends fast because you're going to lose them because you're going to move to someplace else.
Yeah. Well, you know, my mom had four kids, and we all went to different schools in different parts of the city. And she found a way to get us all there in time to make her shift at the hospital as a nurse.
Well, what are your siblings' names, the oldest one?
Yeah, Santi is the oldest one.
Oh, I forgot. This is going to be hard.
S-A-N-T-I.
Santi?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's pretty. What does that mean?
Santi is short for Shanti, which is in a Hindu word, and it is about, you know, calmness and peace within.
Okay.
So people will often chant like Om Shanti Shanti, and it's like bring me peace.
It's Shanti, not Santi.
Well, we pronounce it Santi, but in India they would say Shanti.
Well, how much older than you is she?
5 years.
Okay, who's next?
Next is Christina.
Okay.
A straightforward name. Yeah,
I was going to say, there we go. And how much older is she than you?
She is about 17 months older than me, and she reminded me of that all the time when we were kids.
Then it's you, I assume.
And then it's me.
And then after you?
And then my little brother, Gopal. G-O-P-A-L.
Gopal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then when we were mad at him, we'd call him Go Away Paul.
How much younger is he than you?
He's seven years.
Oh, so he was kind of like, oops.
Yeah, the second marriage. My mom got remarried and had him, and it was just kind of funny because my dad, every time he had a child with my mom, he was hoping for a boy. And then he had three girls. And then at that point, he's like, okay, I'm done having kids. And then the next kid my mom had is a boy. And so my dad's like, you know what? I finally got my boy.
Yeah.
And he totally took him under his wing. And my brother actually lives with my dad now in Connecticut.
Okay. Don't confuse me. Okay.
Yeah.
So unlike like 51% of the marriages nowadays are result in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a divorced family. So your dad and your mom had you and Santi and Krista,
mm-hmm.
and then they divorced,
mm-hmm.
and then your mom remarried, and she had Gopal,
mm-hmm.
and Gopal lives with your dad?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know, isn't it wild?
And now another one I have to do. 17 different schools.
Yes.
Okay, so that means that you were changing schools halfway through, midstream.
Often, yeah.
Because you didn't go to school for 17 years.
No, I know. It's so wild. I love my mom, and she blazes her own trails. And one thing she did was support me unconditionally in everything I wanted to do, almost to an extreme. So, you know, when you're a kid, you wake up, you're like, I want to be a ballerina. Well, then my mom would put me in a special magnet art school for dance. And then I wake up and it's like, well, I want to be a scientist. So then she'll put me into a magnet school for math and science. And then it was like, well, I want to learn German. So she puts me in a German-American school. So she was always really encouraging of my passions, so much so that I went to specialized schools for each of my different interests. But when you're a kid, your interests are changing every day.
Well, did Santi do the same?
No, my other siblings pretty much went to the same, you know, elementary school, and then they did a middle school, and then they did high school. I was just the exception to the rule.
So what about your dad? You mentioned he was Indian?
Mm-hmm.
And your mom was?
Guyanese. She's from South America.
What kind? Guyanese?
Mm-hmm.
As in Guyana?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
British Guyana. Yeah.
Okay. Guyanese.
Uh-huh. Guyanese.
Okay. So we have Indian and Guyanese. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, where did they meet?
They met in Paris, France.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So my mom had finished nursing school, and she wanted to take a year off and just live in Europe. And she was an au pair. And my dad is from a French colony in India. So he was actually a dual citizen of France and India growing up. And then when he was, I believe, 18, they gave him an opportunity to go study in France. And so for him, he's like, get me out of here. I want to go to France. Because that was his, you know, way out of poverty. And he went and was working on a farm. And my mom was an au pair, and she needed another job, so she started on the farm as a cook. But she can't cook to save her life, and my dad's a chef. So he would work in the fields all day, and then at night come in and cook all the food for my mom so that in the daytime she would just have to reheat it. And they fell in love.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you say your dad is a chef. And did he go to culinary school? Or how did he... That was his income while you, besides your rentals?
When we were kids, he owned three restaurants. So he owned two Indian restaurants and a French restaurant. And then he decided to move to the Big Apple because that was his dream. So when I was a kid, he actually left Portland, moved to the Big Apple, and worked in the food and beverage industry.
And you still stayed in Portland?
Yep.
With mom and your siblings?
Exactly.
Or actually, maybe not Gopal.
Not yet, yeah. Okay. But it was great because I got to be with my dad, you know, Christmas break, spring break, summer break, which is about 4 months a year. And when I saw him, I was always on vacation. So it was always fun times with Papa. You know, there was no homework that had to be done. There was no dance recitals to run off to and can't find my tights for and stress. It was just always good quality time.
My guest this morning on KYMN Radio is Lakshmi, and her last name is Sylvie Dady.
Mm-hmm.
And you're from Minneapolis? Where are you from?
I'm living in Minneapolis,
okay.
Yeah.
And she has a couple of businesses, Be Free and the Coaching Hour. And we talked about that for a while. Now we're learning more. I knew you were going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I could just tell. And I'm nosy.
Okay. I like it. I open myself up to this.
When you would go to New York,
yes,
from Portland,
yeah,
to be with your dad, mm-hmm, during your vacation time, where was he living in New York?
In New York City.
Yeah, but where?
Oh, so
Manhattan
we were in Manhattan. We would stay often on the Upper West Side, which was great because it's right by the Hudson, and you know you can walk to Central Park pretty easily. And I remember we could walk to the Seinfeld restaurant, which was always really fun for me. The food's actually terrible there, but it was fun to go there.
What was the name of that restaurant?
You know, I don't even remember. I just have a picture of me in front of it.
Yeah, it just says restaurant.
Yeah, I think it says restaurant. That's, yeah. It's on the corner there. It's that blue sign. Yeah.
Does it have Indian proprietors?
I doubt it.
Well, you watch Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't. So,
yeah.
Funny scenes there.
I love it.
So, when it was just you and your dad then? And he was.
And my sisters. And my brother would come a lot too.
Okay.
So
where was he chefing?
He actually worked at a yacht club north of the cities a little bit, and he managed the beverage and just the beverage services there. So it was a fascinating way to be raised because, like, Portland is very funky and unique and artsy, and everyone's really kind, you know, for the most part, right? I mean, those are generalizations. But then you go to New York, and it's like, don't look at me, get out of my way. You know, you got to, like, make sure you're not going to get mugged. And so it kind of gave me, like, the best of both worlds.
Did you use the subway system?
Yeah, for sure. I wasn't allowed to take it by myself until college, but we took it everywhere.
Any interesting stories about that?
Oh, my gosh, so many. I mean, I think that my favorite is the performers that get on the subway. And now I feel like a New Yorker because I've been there for years, if you put all the time together, of my life. But these performers will get on the subway, and it's like, I didn't ask you to get on my train, but now you are demanding that I pay you for performing in front of me. And I think the most interesting one I saw was these two gymnast men, young men in their 20s probably, and they were doing flips through the bars that you hold on to, but there's only like a 10-inch clearance between the bar and the ceiling of the train, and they would run at full force, grab the bar, flip themselves through the small opening, and then like wind up on the other side. And it was a full train, and they didn't kick anyone in the face, but they were doing all kinds of flips and twirls and twists. And it was like, how did they practice this, and how were they not hitting anyone in the face? It was one of the few where I actually think I did give them some money because I was so amazed.
How about on the streets?
The streets of New York, honestly, they're hard for me. People love New York, and I do too, but it's very dirty. And there's so much wealth, and there's such extreme poverty right there. So when I think of the streets of New York, I think of, like, the crazy homeless man wearing a cardboard box screaming about dinosaurs coming back, you know, and then the millionaire getting out of his car, throwing his coffee cup on the street, going into his fancy building, right there, right next to each other, you know. So, I don't know, New York, I love it, and I think it's a great example of like, whoa, we've got some tough things going on in America, and we've got people that need help, and we've got people that could give it.
So while your dad was at work, did he work the day shift, the night shift, both? Or, I mean, how did you entertain yourselves while your dad was at work when you're in Manhattan?
You know, your memory as a kid is so different. I only remember him being with us. The few times he had to go into work, we would go, and it was awesome because it was a yacht club, so we could play tennis. There was like squash courts. We could take the boat out and go on the water. All you can eat, steaks and ice cream. That I could just go in the kitchen and there was a machine and I could get as much ice cream as I wanted. so even, you know, if we did have to go to the yacht club and hang out while I was working, I remember it being really fun. We'd play like chase the raccoon away from the dumpsters. And
well, I'm just thinking that, you know, now while I'm gone, you stay in the apartment.
Yeah.
You know, did he have a nice apartment, a walk-up, a brownstone?
Yeah, well, we did get a brownstone in Harlem, which people are like, ooh, Harlem. And it's like, no, it's not the Harlem you think of. Bill Clinton's office is just down the street. Whole Foods is now across the street. So it's a totally different Harlem than the Harlem people think of. It's right by the Apollo Theater. And that, I remember one year, it was Christmas, and there was a gunshot on Christmas Eve. And they had come to collect the body. Someone had been shot on the corner. But they didn't clear the snow. And so it was Christmas morning, and we go to get something at the bodega, and we have to jump over bloody snow. And I just remember thinking, like, this is New York City for you. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the world is happening right here in your face, and you can't escape it. And
bodega?
Bodega. It's like these little corner stores where they sell coffee and pastries. And yeah.
We're going to take our final break this hour on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. We will be right back with our guest this morning, Lakshima.
Do you have a wedding in your future? Is navigating the options for your big day leaving your head spinning? Not to worry. We have good news for you. On Thursday, May 10th, head to the second annual Northfield Area Wedding Vendor Fair at the Gardens of Castle Rock. With over 35 vendors, every aspect of your special day will be covered. From venues to caterers, wedding planners to florists, photographers to DJs, and everything in between. Go to the Gardens of Castle Rock Facebook page to check out the video from last year's fair. Click on the link at kymnradio.net for more information and to register for the fair and your chance to win cash prizes at the Northfield Area Wedding Vendor Fair, Thursday, May 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Gardens of Castle Rock.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
I do. I use their water all the time. It is 5 minutes before 10 o'clock, and Lakshima is my guest here, and I have her permission to use just the first name, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I can say Lakshima Dady.
Yeah.
But to wrap up New York City, did you get a chance to do... You know, how old were you at that time when you were with your dad in New York City?
From 8 until now. So I've been going to New York 3 or 4 times a year for, 12 years?
Okay, so you've had other experiences like the theater.
Like 16 years. Oh, my gosh, wow. Yeah, love going to Broadway. I grew up going to Broadway plays all the time. And then they would come to Portland, you know, on tour. And my friends were like, we're going to go see Wicked. And it's like, I already saw it on Broadway in New York, you know.
Going back to your high school days in Portland, Oregon, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you didn't have a set home school, home school, how could you participate in debate and speech and chess and athletic sports, or how could you connect?
Yeah. Well, one thing I've always done, being the new girl, I'm used to walking into a room and not knowing anyone, is I just jump in. I jump in full force. I get myself as involved as possible. And I've done my best to do that in Minnesota. And I know that's why my business is so successful, because it's just giving my full self to it. So even if I was at that school for 4 months, you bet your bottom I was on the student council, I was playing a sport, and I was, you know, taking extra classes or tutoring after school in the areas that I was weak in.
What sports?
So I played soccer, which I actually never really liked, lacrosse, which I loved.
That's a bump-em game.
For the boys, it is. The girls, it's no contact. So we play it actually the traditional way. And then I did cheerleading, I did competitive dance, I did trapeze. So just kind of like whatever the school had, I would just throw myself into it. And if the school didn't have the sport that I was playing, I could go to the local public high school and play the sport there.
Well, now, some people might consider that being a quitter.
Mm.
You know what I mean? If you took skating and you took violin and you took whatever, and then you quit because I want to go do something else.
Mm.
Did people ever suggest that, hey, man, you're a quitter?
No, actually, I've never even thought about myself as that, because when I do something, I do it so intentionally and with every cell in my body that it's never, ever felt like quitting. It's felt like I gave it my all, and I'll either continue to do it sporadically for the rest of my life, or it served its purpose in my life, and I'm done with that now.
Okay. What about trapeze? You'd still do that?
I'm actually going to start taking classes at Circus Juventus again.
That's in St. Paul, is it?
Circus Juventus, I believe so, yeah. I'm really excited to start that back up as an adult. I think it was a lot easier when you're 80 pounds, but yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, you probably gained 20, 30 pounds. what about that trapeze? Is that a game or a scoring competitive or just something that's cool?
So trapeze for me, when I did it for 9 years as a kid, it was through a local circus company theater. And so we learned all the different aspects of like gymnastics, theatrics, and then, you know, doing tricks on the trapeze. So, you know, the triangle that's swinging up and down like you see in the circus, learning how to jump from one trapeze to the next, learning how to hang from a trapeze with someone hanging from your feet, and then how to get them up on the trapeze, and now you're hanging from your, you know, from their feet. So it was really, really wonderful. And my goal was to make it, I'm very goal-oriented. So as a kid, I was like, I want to make it to the performing theater. I want to be good enough at trapeze to where I could actually be in the paid shows. And then once I reached that goal, it was good. I'd reached my goal. And then I was ready to try a more normal kid sport, like soccer, you know.
That had to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. I look back on the things I did, and it's like, I don't know, and that's why I'm excited to do it as an adult, because when you're a kid, you're fearless, you know. Now I'm like, if I fall like that, I could really hurt myself. But as a kid, you're
did
not
you ever,
worried.
Well, they had nets, I would assume.
They didn't have nets, but we had mats that you could fall on. So my biggest fall was probably 12 feet. So, and I was fine. I was a kid. You know, you just jump back up.
Did you
again.
Ever get to meet a guy named David Nelson?
No, tell me about David Nelson.
Well, when I was a kid, there was a show called Ozzie and Harriet, and they had two sons. One was Ricky Nelson, and the other was David Nelson. And Ricky Nelson went on to be a singing star.
Mm.
Unfortunately, he died in an airplane accident at a very young age, in his 30s probably. And his brother David became a trapeze artist.
Mm.
So that's why I asked that question.
Cool.
People my age listening know what I'm talking about. Of course, that was 2-3 generations ago. We're going to take a break for the news. Is that all right with you?
Please.
We'll be back with Lakshima right after the news on KYMN 1080 AM on your radio dial. And now the one, 95.1 FM.
Threat of contempt, CIA backup plan. I'm Michael Toscano. The Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee is threatening to hold Attorney General Jeff Sessions in contempt of Congress. Devin Nunes charges Sessions with not responding to a request for information about alleged surveillance abuse by the FBI and Justice Department in the Russia investigation.
It was ignored, not acknowledged, just completely ignored. So last week we sent a subpoena, and then on Thursday we discovered that they are not going to comply with our subpoena.
Nunes appearing on Fox and Friends. President Trump has tweeted his support for Gina Haspel to become the next CIA director following reports Haspel was considering withdrawing her name from consideration. Worry remains over her role in harsh interrogation techniques, and Barbara Starr reports the White House does have a backup plan.
There are plans to potentially tap another person to be the nominee if Haspel falters in her confirmation hearing on Wednesday. That would be Sue Gordon. That is a name we are hearing. She is the Deputy Director of National Intelligence.
With President Trump on the verge of announcing whether or not he intends to pull the United States out of the Iran nuclear deal, and with Iran threatening economic retaliation, including with the supply of oil, gas prices at the pump may shoot higher here. Business reporter Christine Romans checking one prediction.
Gas Buddy, it's, you know, a group that tracks gas prices at gas stations around the country. They say add 30 cents to the gallon of gas this summer if the U.S. pulls out of the Iran deal. That's their worst case scenario.
Gas prices have already been on the rise because of higher crude oil costs and the phasing in of summer-grade gasoline, which is used to prevent smog. A bill designed to allow the temporary seizure of guns from those considered to be at risk is moving to the Colorado State Senate after passing the Colorado House. The bill would allow weapons to be taken away via court order from people having a mental health crisis. First half hour of trading on Wall Street showing slight gains. I'm Michael Toscano.
Everybody, welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on this absolutely glorified or glorious morning. It's just beautiful out there. On the 7th of May, 2018, for those of you that may be listening back sometime in the future, I wanted you to know that in downtown Northfield, we have a lot to look at, and I have to ask Lakshmi, I'm saying it right now, Lakshmi, have you ever been to Northfield before?
Today was my first day, and I hope it's not my last because it's absolutely beautiful here. I can't wait to check out the cute downtown area and all the unique shops and hopefully get myself some lunch.
Well, you can go to the Quarterback Club over on Highway 3 and 3rd Street, and then, of course, there are places up and down the street that you can stop in.
Mm-hmm.
And places down by the river, if you want.
Nice.
On the patios.
Yeah, I love that the river runs right through the town center. It's really beautiful here.
A river runs through it. Why do I... That sounds so familiar. I think it's after a movie that was out at one time. Maybe that was the name of the movie, A River Runs Through It. Anyhow, we are talking about you, and I want to know more about Mom and Dad, okay?
Yeah.
Did your dad ever take you and or your siblings back to British India, where he was raised to see the country?
Our entire lives, my dad was like, we are American and we speak English. So he never taught us anything about India because he really wanted us to be American. And as a result of that, I'm a huge patriot. I mean, I love America. I could live anywhere in the world, and I choose to live here. I'm very proud to be an American. I'm grateful my family came here because they wanted us to have the best possible life, and they intentionally chose America for that. But I heard that my grandma was dying, and her dying wish was to see my dad before she passed, and he had no interest in going back to see her. And so I went. I found a study abroad program in college that was going to as close to my dad's town as I could get. And I didn't have a name or a phone number or an address, but I was just determined to find her before she died and learn about this part of my history. And my dad, Indian dads, if you know anything about them, very strict, and you never disobey them, especially the daughter. And I'd never disobeyed my dad until that point, but I just felt this conviction in my heart to go there and find her. And he wouldn't give me any information. He just completely told all of my aunts and uncles, don't tell her anything. She's not supposed to go to India. She's supposed to be studying in college.
Well, let me ask questions along the way, because this is interesting. Mm-hmm. So was your dad's last name Dady?
Yes.
So he changed his name?
No. His dad was part British.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're going to go see your grandmother, whom you've never met and mm-hmm. don't know anything about,
yeah.
against your father's wishes.
Yes.
And Indian fathers and Middle East fathers are very strict with mm-hmm. their daughters. Some that consider their daughters precious. Other cultures consider them less than that.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you find a grandma if you don't know where to start?
Yeah, and I don't speak the language, and I'm white-looking, so that's kind of confusing, because then I'm like, where's my grandma? And everyone's like, you're white. What are you talking about? Your grandma's not here. So I went, and it was just, honestly, it was the power of prayer and the power of intention, and it was like this study abroad program had given me a huge scholarship to go to India to find her, and I just had to do it. And my dad's one request, he's like, if you're going to defy me, at least bring a man with you, because in India, it's very challenging to navigate without a man. Like so much as when we go to restaurants, he has to order for me. The waiter will not take my order. One of the many reasons why I love living in America. So I go to India and I just start searching. I go to the telephone company.
Well, who went with you?
My friend from the study abroad program.
Okay. And out of what college?
Gosh, I don't even remember. I was from University of Oregon.
Okay.
But I did this program called Semester at Sea, where you sail around the world.
Gee.
And India was just one of our stops. So.
We better slow down, because I like details. I mean, you know, you can always come back, okay?
Sounds good. I'd be happy to.
Okay, and I have to say that in all of the 17 or 18 schools that you went to,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, were you in that junior-senior part of life, you actually graduated in ahead of yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did you do about things like the prom?
I went, well, my boyfriend was 2 years older than me, so I got to go to prom my sophomore year of high school.
Tell me about it.
We went to Olive Garden. We rented a party bus. I went with all the popular senior girls. I was so excited to, you know, fit in and be with them, and they all invited me to go fake tanning before the prom. I'd never been. I'm, you know, half Indian, so I tan really naturally. And they had me go for 30 minutes, which I learned later is illegal. You can't actually be in a tanning bed for more than 12 minutes now. It's a national law. But I'm in there cooking, and I thought, it's supposed to feel like this, or I don't know, it's really hot, but, like, I think this is good. And it turns out I was so red. I had three-degree burns throughout my entire body. My mom had to make me a bathtub full of oatmeal. It was horrible. I could barely move. And my dress was red, and so I just looked like a tomato because my skin was bright red and my dress was red. And then I had to try to find a dress a few days before the prom that wasn't bright red, and a friend lent me one, and that was my prom experience.
Well, what did the was it a, did all of the girls do the half hour?
No, they were just being mean and hazing me. Yeah, you know, they were the popular senior girls, and I was this little sophomore new to the school, right? Because I'm always the new girl. And I was with this, like, star basketball player boyfriend, and they were kind of like, who is this girl? You know, let's burn her skin.
I was going to ask you if they did that as a mean.
Oh, yeah.
So did you have a relationship with them afterwards?
No, I mean, they were graduating, and I was going to college, and it didn't matter. But it's one of those moments where I look back, and I'm like, girls can be so mean to one another.
Oh, yeah. What about the boy, the basketball star? What was what nationality was he?
Just true blue American. MacDonald was his last name, and we dated for years. He was my first love, and you know, went to college together and did that whole thing. And then one day we just woke up and said, "I think this is good. I think we've given each other all we can give each other. Time's up."
Amen. I say unto you. All right. So when you were doing all of these various schools, did you ever get to acting school?
I mean, I did a lot of theater.
Yeah, theater.
Children's theater, local theater. Yeah, my mom did an amazing job of making sure we were all really busy. And I think that's kind of what you have to do when you have four kids, because there's just so many of them. You can't give them all your attention.
Yeah.
So we were all in classes, activities, plays, you know, competitions, sports.
So who did the shuttling around?
We took the bus a lot. We were really independent kids. My mom was like, you can do anything you want. You just have to find a way to pay for it and get there.
So did you find a way to pay for it?
Yeah, I would like file paperwork at the dance studio so I could get reduced rate classes. And, you know, when I did trapeze, I would do the same thing there. I would do administrative secretarial work as a kid, you know. What else would I do? You know, I would sell candy to raise money for my cheerleading costume and do garage sales every year to support my different sports. And yeah.
How long were you on the cheerleading squad?
A year. Well, you know, I was only in high school for two, so a year. Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a cherished position to be a cheerleader. Did cheerleaders in Oregon, Portland, do all sports, or were there the football cheerleaders, the basketball cheerleaders, wrestling cheerleaders?
We did all the sports. And the year I was a cheerleader, we were trying, you know, I think the feminist wave was kind of starting again in the early 2000s. And so we actually cheered at some girls' sporting events, too, like girls' basketball or women's basketball. And they hated it. They did not want us there. The volleyball team did not want us there, you know. The girls' basketball team did not want us there. So it was really, we cheered a lot for people that didn't want us there cheering for them, which was really funny. Like, we cheered at baseball games, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was just.
I've never heard of that.
Exactly. It was so weird. But they were just trying to do this thing where everyone could have cheerleaders at their events, you know, because they wanted everyone to feel supported and cheered on.
And what is the thing that people would want to do for sure if they went to Portland, Oregon?
I love the Rose Garden. I'm, you know, because I was a Rose Festival princess. And it's, you can see Mount Hood. It's up on this hill. You can see all of downtown. And then there's, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of different types of plants, especially roses. Roses that you will not be able to see anywhere in the world other than Portland. So, I mean, you have to go during rose season. You know, we're looking April to even as late as September. But it's a really magical garden, and it's just expansive, and it goes on and on. You can get lost, and then there's a Japanese garden right above it that's absolutely stunning.
What was it like, and where did you go, and what did you do being a rose princess or queen or ambassador?
Like I said, we traveled all over the state of Oregon promoting the Rose Festival, so we did a lot of performing at retirement communities and spending time with people in retirement communities because oftentimes they're alone. We did a ton of community service educating people on all kinds of things from toxic waste that was in their community that they didn't know about to, you know, volunteering with kids and a lot of parades. I got very used to sitting on the back of a Corvette. So it was a really rich program where I got to be on the radio and I got to give the weather, which was actually really hard on the news because it's just a green screen and you're pointing aimlessly and you don't know where what is.
I used to be a weatherman on television a long time ago and at the advent of color at the station. And we didn't have anything like that at all. We just said it's going to be 80 tomorrow, 60 tonight. Good night. Thanks for watching. Mm. I mean, it was more in depth than that, but
yeah.
it not like it is today.
Yeah, I read that on your bio. I was curious what that was like back then.
Oh, it was something a lot different than it is today, for sure. But a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. Mm. You know, we didn't have to, you know, go to meteorology school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was reporting the weather information we gathered from different sources as opposed to making it up herself or having the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But did you travel out of state at all as a Miss Portland or whatever your title was?
Rose Festival Ambassadors, we went all over the state, but we did not go out of state. The queen who wins the competition, she gets to go to our sister city in Thailand, and I think our sister city in other states, and she'll go to like national conferences for parades, so she has a larger role, but there's just 15 princesses.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
Like the St. Paul Winter Carnival has the east wind, the west wind, the north wind, the south wind, etc. 15 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning on KYMN Radio is Lakshmi And she is a woman that's an entrepreneur with her company called Be Free, and also is a member of the staff at Coaching Hour. All available information will be told to you a little bit later on in the show. Right now, we're jumping all over and I'm learning things. And what's the weather like in Portland?
It rains 300 days a year. Yeah. But I'm also curious if we're going to leave the listeners hanging for that India story with my grandma, or if we're just going to have to come back and do it again later.
Well, no. We'll get back to it.
I love it. What? Yeah. What I love about Portland is that because it rains so much, all your plants are thriving. You know, everything is alive. Some people find it depressing that there's gray skies every day, but it just reminds me of home.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that. I couldn't live in San Diego either, I don't think, where it's sunny all the time.
Yeah.
I like the seasons. You know? It got a little bit rambunctious here this past spring. Were you surprised about that snowfall we had, 2 weeks ago today?
You know, I am embarrassed to say this, but I was actually really excited for it because I had never been sledding in Minnesota, and I've been living here for over a year now. And so right when April came, I thought, I can't believe I let an entire winter go without sledding once. And then we got that final last blizzard, and my fiance and I were out all day just lapping it up and sledding all over the cities. It was so fun.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Let's go back to India.
All right.
So Minnesota
to India.
You get off the plane with a fellow college student, and you got a grant of sorts to make this trip to India to locate your paternal grandmother, of whom you have no known knowledge because your dad would not share that with you.
Mm-hmm.
So what information did you have before you got on the plane to go to India?
I was on a boat, remember that. So I got off the boat. And
you didn't fly there?
No, I circumnavigated the globe on a boat. So our boat went to India on one of the stops and got off the boat in Chennai.
Is this a boat or a ship?
A ship, yeah. I mean, there were 600 college kids on the boat. So.
Oh, what a tough deal. Did you get seasick?
I only did once when we were going around the Horn of Africa, where the seas are really rough, and everyone was sick at that point. And I think I would have been fine if I hadn't seen so many other people get sick.
Yeah.
And then when you're watching other people get sick, it sickens you, and then you get sick. But just that one time, I didn't need to take any of the nausea pills or any of the people wear special wristbands for it, but I didn't need
what,
that.
What quarters did you live in? What was it like to
live
on this boat?
Half the size of the studio. And shared with someone. I mean, you just open the door and it's a bunk bed. And that's it, really. I mean, a tiny closet. So thankfully, I only had a suitcase. But as we stopped in every country, we'd buy stuff. And by the end of the journey, I mean, our room, you could barely breathe, you know. No windows, which was tough. But it was also nice because you could sleep at any time of day because it's pitch black, you know. But it was wonderful. 6 floors on the ship. You know, we had a gym, we had a spa, which I never went to because I was a broke college student, but some kids went. You know, buffet meals, which were, but food. And the biggest thing I remember about Semester at Sea, other than meeting my best friend, was that our reverse osmosis machine broke when we were on a 5-day trek from South America to Ghana, Africa. And reverse osmosis was our only way of getting water to drink. And so we didn't have water for like a day and a half or 2 days. And that really changed my life because I remember just being thirsty. And you drink the salt water and you're just thirstier. And then we're like sucking lettuce to try to get some liquid out of that. And it was a frightening experience, but it taught me like the value of water and having access to clean water that you can drink. And how scary it is when you don't have that.
No, that was the home of your mother, wasn't it?
My mom's from Guyana, South America. We went to Ghana, Africa.
Oh, okay.
West Africa.
The G's got me.
No, I know. Everyone's always asking me that. So.
Okay. So you get on this boat, and when you get to India, you're going to make this effort. What information did you have when you got off the boat to go look for your grandmother?
I knew that we called her Meme, M-E-M-E, but I think that's just a term of endearment. I don't think that's her real name. Well, now I know it's not. Her real name is Martha. And I knew my last name, right? I knew my dad's last name was Dady, so I'm assuming that her last name is Dady. And that's all I got. My dad was actually raised in an orphanage, so I knew where that orphanage was. I knew the name of it. So I just started by, you know, going to the telephone company and pulling up anyone with the last name of Dady. And then, I love India for this, they gave me the address of everybody who had my last name at the phone company in that city, which in America would never happen. First of all, you can't just walk into a phone company. And second of all, they're definitely not going to give you the addresses of their clients. But in India, they're like, whatever, white lady. So I went to each of those houses just kind of like, I'll go there and maybe we'll just instantly know, or maybe we'll put it together, you know. And we went to all these houses and they none of them felt right. A lot of times the people weren't even home. We would just go kind of look in the windows and like, do you think this is your grandma's house? Nah, it doesn't look. I just don't feel like it would be. And then we went to the orphanage and the English teacher took me to the nuns that raised my dad. And one of the nuns was like, oh, I'm actually your grandmother's cousin. So let's go see her. And we walk down the road. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm finally going to meet my grandma. And we get to where my grandmother's quote unquote house was. And it's just rubble. It had been torn down. And there was a little sign on the door that said Dady. So we knew that she had lived there, but no one was living there now. It was totally under construction. And then I just felt really defeated and was getting nervous. We only had so many days in India. We had 5 days, and we were on the second day at this point. And then finally, the third day, that same nun took me with one of the construction workers from the house through out of the city, more and more into the slums. It was getting like scarier and scarier, more and more rural, more and more stray dogs running in the streets. We're on a little rickshaw. I have a nun on my lap in her white outfit. And we get to this like dirt path and it's chaos because they don't see white people a lot, let alone in the slums. So all these people are running around and talking and probably asking me for money. And, you know, it's just everyone's like around. And I look up and I see this woman on her balcony and I instantly knew it was my grandma. And like all the chatter faded away, all the noise, all the distraction. I don't know what anyone's saying anyways. I don't speak Tamil or Hindi. But I see her and I just knew it was her. And we don't look that alike. I mean, she looks Indian. I don't look Indian. But she threw down a key and we went upstairs and she instantly, you know, was touching my face and crying. And we just knew. It was like, it's unexplainable. It was magic.
Was your guy with you, the man that...
Yeah, he had to come with me everywhere. And he actually had his camera around his neck on, like, one of those cords. And he didn't tell me, but he filmed the whole journey secretly.
Oh, wow.
And then he made a little, like, two-minute clip of the journey of us going to the telephone station, going to all those random houses, you know, going to the orphanage, going to the nunnery, going to the broken-down, you know, house under construction, going through the slums to where my grandma was staying.
No, was the nun, did the nun speak English?
Maybe very little, yes.
So the communication between you and your grandmother were looks and hugs.
And she speaks French, and I can understand a good amount of French. So she could speak to me in French, and I could understand. And, you know, what's amazing is, like, when there's love and family connection, words don't even matter. You know what I mean? Like, yes, we were able to communicate enough, but like hand gestures and eye contact and being with each other was really all we needed.
Now, I've seen pictures of famous photographers that have taken pictures of older women in India, and they look, you know, dissolute or whatever the word would be, very wrinkled, and a look in their eye like, why? Maybe wearing a scarf. Okay, with beautiful big brown eyes. What age was your grandmother, and how'd she look, and was your grandfather still there?
No, grandfather passed away when my dad was 10. That's why he had to go live in the orphanage as a kid.
Okay.
And I recognize that a lot of famous photographers used to portray people in third world countries as like very sad, but there's so much joy there. You know, in so many ways, they're richer than us because they have time, and they're not concerned with like how many likes they're getting, you know, because they don't even have a cell phone or internet or a television or a computer. So my grandmother was full of life, you know. She's in her late 90s now. She's not really on any medication. She can walk around just fine. She, you know, still tells my dad what to do and bosses him around. Now that I went and connected with her, he goes back every year.
Oh.
So it totally changed our family dynamics. And since I went, he has then since taken me and all my sisters to go.
So did he, that was his mom, your mm-hmm. grandmother. So did he find a new love and respect for her, or was he still ticked off, kind of, because he ended up in the orphanage? Or?
No, I think now it's all just love, and, like, you know, it's in the past, and resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die, so it's all love, yeah, and it's so fun now that it's like I get to really be, like, in my culture. Like, as a kid, I didn't know anything about Indian culture, really. We'd go to temple to eat, but that was about it. And now, we get to go back, and I get to, you know, wear her clothes and learn how to wrap a sari and, you know, do the different traditions and wear a bindi and learn how to mark my home with special kinds of colors for different occasions. And it's awesome. It's created a whole new family for our family.
Well, if you tried, you could look pretty Indian.
Yeah, when I was there, I was really brown, and so I looked very Indian. But yeah. You know,
but
it,
I mean,
here in Minnesota,
the hair and the eyes, you know. But I mean, when you put on those traditional gowns that you were talking about, mm-hmm. I imagine you look like fit right in.
Yeah, well, I'm still significantly lighter than they are,
yeah.
You know. So,
tell me about the other side. Okay, we got your dad was a chef, and he worked in Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
and you visited him like almost 4 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And your grandmother is in her 90s, and she lives outside of what major city?
Pondicherry.
Oh, Pondicherry. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you regularly visit her. Have been for the last several years, and so you are a trapeze artist, and let's go over to your mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned that she's from Guyana,
mm-hmm.
and she's Guyanese.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and your folks met in Paris,
mm-hmm.
and tell me about your mom, and going back to your grandparents on the maternal side.
Yeah. So I always say my mom is a wild woman with a cause. She moves her feet to the rhythm of her heart, regardless of what society or anybody says is possible. So she's really shown me that you can do anything. And she was like living, breathing example of that. My grandparents on her side, my grandmother's from Germany, which is why my skin is so fair. And my grandfather is from Guyana. And they met in Scotland. So after World War II, my grandmother was a translator in Scotland because she spoke French, German, English, Latin. And so she would translate. And my grandfather was there as a forester. So my grandfather managed the forests in Guyana, in the Amazon rainforest. And he had all kinds of crazy stories about, like, anacondas the size of a skyscraper opening their mouth, consuming his entire head, and then he pries its mouth open with his bare hands and escapes, you know. he's an amazing storyteller. And they moved to Guyana so he could manage forests, and they had four children. And my mom was one of them. And then my grandfather had an opportunity to work for the U.S. Forest Service in America. And so they moved from Guyana to America when my mom was 12 or 11, I believe. And so I think that was really...
Where to in America?
In Portland, or just outside of Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so my mom went to high school in America and middle school. And I think that was a really wild transition for four kids. Oftentimes when immigrants move, especially big families, they go in pieces. They can't all go together. So the kids went, I think, one by one. So some of them stayed in Guyana, and then one would go, and then a little bit later another one would go. And I think it was just a really just culture shock, right? I mean, she's used to being the only white person in the whole city, and now she's looks like everybody else but has a funky accent, and no one knows, you know, no one gets it.
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting how that all came to be, but my grandmother was an avid gardener and had like an acre big garden in Oregon, and she would grow all her own food in the summer, which now as an adult, I'm so impressed by. You know, as a kid, it was just like, oh yeah, we'll go get some carrots. And now it's like, wow, until her dying day, she managed an acre big garden by herself and grew all of her own food for the most part in the summers. It's amazing.
Amazing. Absolutely. Yeah. Amazing how the time flies. It's 10:31 on 1080 Radio. And my guest this morning is Lakshmi, and we're going to continue our conversation, but I have to remind you that at 11 o'clock this morning, on today's 15 with the author, Terry Knight talks with Kim Brophy about her book, Meet Your Dog, The Game-Changing Guide to Understanding Your Dog's Behavior. Kim is an award-winning certified canine behavior consultant and has developed a comprehensive framework known as LEGS, Learning, Environment, Genetics, and Self. Brophy talks about the myth of a magic method of good training. She discusses the serious jobs many dogs were bred for and how they conflict with our expectations, and also shares personal stories of some of her clients. That's at 11 o'clock this morning on 15 with the author with KYMN Radio's own Terry Knight.
Spring is officially here. Mother's Day and prom are both this weekend, and Judy's Floral Design on Division Street across from the middle school is ready. Judy's Floral Design has an array of marvelous flowers to pick from, or browse judysfreshfloraldesign.com for a large selection of arrangements and price ranges. Happy Mother's Day, and remember, no matter if it's prom or mom, Judy's Florals is ready for flowers to become a part of your day.
Wenzel Heating and Air Conditioning in Eagan is a customer-focused company that employs highly trained people whose goal is to be the best service company in the 13-county metro area. When you deal with Wenzel HVAC, you can expect a positive working environment, practical advice and suggestions, flexible payment options, cutting-edge technology, headache-free maintenance, a dedication to service, and technical excellence. Serving the South Metro, Wenzel HVAC in Eagan. Call 651-894-9898.
Well, the number one song in 1991, the year my guest was born. I don't know if you can recognize this tune at all.
Not yet. Not yet.
Look into my eyes.
Now I do.
Do you? It's Bryan Adams, and I Do It For You.
Such a
number one song, 1991. It is 10:33 on 1080 Radio, KYMN. Kim, now there's a friend you can count on. Our guest this morning is Lakshmi, and we're talking about her business, entrepreneurship, but more into her family right now. And we've discovered your grandma on your dad's side, and you discovered, your mom came when she was 10 years old from Guyana to Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And she was, this is your mother?
My mother.
Okay. Is she the gardener?
My grandmother.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yeah, my maternal grandmother.
Well, now, when did she come? She came over with your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because your grandpa was a forester.
Mm-hmm.
All right, got that. And I wonder why they would want somebody from Guyana, which is a totally different topography, I would assume, to come to America on the West Coast.
Well, I know that he studied in England, or in Europe. So, and I know that he was extremely skilled because he was managing a large portion of the forestry in the Amazon. So I think it's one of those things where it's like he had the skills, and then the knowledge will come. You know, like with any job, it doesn't really matter if you know the job, but do you have the skills, and are you trainable?
Okay. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of anacondas in Portland or in immediate area. What about you after getting out of school? Why did you want to speed out of school? Why did you graduate when you could have? You would have been a sophomore, completing your sophomore year.
Yeah, well, I did study abroad in between my freshman and sophomore years. So I had the opportunity of living in Europe for a couple months. So I graduated what would have been my junior year, but my sophomore year I was abroad, kind of doing my own self-study program. And I think a big part...
As a high schooler?
Yeah. I was 15.
They have study abroad programs for high schoolers?
They do, but I just did my own thing.
Okay.
I just saved up my babysitting money and moved to Germany by myself when I was 15. Yeah.
What did mom think of that, Dad?
She knew that I was going to do what was right for me and that it was going to be a good thing. And she also knew that it was going to really enhance my German. Now I'm fluent, very fluent. And so she supported
it.
Ich kann fließend Deutsch sprechen, weil mein Oma aus Deutschland kommt. Und das war sehr wichtig für mich, für das zu lernen.
Okay, what you said is, I can speak German because I studied it for quite a while and even in Germany.
Close. You got the first part right. And then I said, I learned German because my grandmother was German and it was really important for me to learn it.
Okay.
But you were right there. Do you speak German?
Sie.
Jawohl.
Jawohl.
Toll.
So you do that, which is pretty amazing at that particular age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thought is about college. And so what colleges were you thinking about and which one did you end up attending?
After seeing both of my big sisters go to these really fancy private schools and then have to leave or choose to leave after 1 year because they were $40,000 in debt and only a quarter of the way through their programming.
That's Santi and Christina.
Yeah.
What schools were they?
Santi went to Fordham University in New York City.
Fordham, okay.
And Christina went to Global College, which was an affiliate of the University of Connecticut, and they have campuses all over the world,
yeah,
and you spend each year in a different country.
They have one in Bloomington, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, so... You, what did you do?
So I, you know, seeing that was like, you know, I just want to go to a inexpensive or economical school where I can get a full ride that is guaranteed I'm going to finish college. You know, I don't want to be stressing about being $100,000 in debt when I graduate. So I went to University of Oregon, and I was blessed with a full ride scholarship for 5 years.
The Beavers?
The Ducks.
Oh.
So we're the green and yellow. You're thinking of Oregon State.
Okay.
Very close.
Okay.
We're actually rivals. Honestly.
Yeah, I would assume so. Okay.
Yeah.
So you got a scholarship there.
Mm-hmm.
And what were you going to major in?
I started with environmental studies.
Okay, and then like Dad or Grandpa.
Grandpa, yeah. And then I quickly realized that that was a great way to get super depressed and anxious about the world because you're just learning about, like, the state of the environment and how, like, by 2050 we won't be able to eat out of the ocean. And, you know, there's a landfill the size of the state of Texas floating around in the ocean. And it's just, like, a lot of scary stuff is going on with the environment. And so I was like, well, what's destroying the environment? Business, right? It's the biggest polluters in the world are businesses. So why don't I go into business? And then if I can change how we do business, or if I can start a profitable business that doesn't destroy the environment, you know, maybe I can set a new golden standard or support businesses that are also doing that. So I majored in business, environment, and policy.
And did you take the full 4 years to go there?
I did a fifth year because I was just loving it so much.
Yeah.
And I had the scholarship.
Yeah.
So it was like, why not? Another year of learning? I'll take it.
Now, Playboy magazine had voted Oregon, where you went to school,
mm-hmm.
as the campus of the year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And Animal House was filmed on our campus.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so where that famous food fight takes place.
Yeah,
eat in there all the time. That's our student union building. So
you're way too young for John Belushi, though.
Oh, but I love that movie. It's like it's an American classic.
So you took 5 years. Did you live on campus sometimes?
Never once. No.
Never?
I mean,
okay.
I was like, what, $1,000 a month to share a closet with a stranger? You know, after living in Europe by myself in high school, I was like already an adult, paying my own bills, living my life. So I felt very comfortable getting an apartment, and I did that for...
What did you do to earn the income?
I worked at the University of Oregon Zero Waste Facility. So I sorted through garbage for 5 years. And it was very humbling, and it was important. And the founder of that program, Karen Kaplan, is one of the many women who's helped me be the woman I am today. So,
Karen Kaplan, is that from the Kaplan family up in St. Paul?
I asked
the paper people.
Yeah, I asked her if she was affiliated with Kaplan, and I don't think she is.
Okay.
I know she's from New Jersey.
So when you said you worked in this
zero waste facility.
Okay. Now, I picture standing above a conveyor pulling things out that aren't supposed to go where the conveyor is going.
Or yeah.
Did you have an administrative job there?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I was wearing, you know, green overalls and safety goggles and gloves and, you know, with a hand trolley. We did everything from driving around the trucks and picking up the recycling to taking it back to a warehouse, which was actually an old military bunker where they used to store Agent Orange. So you can see the 55-gallon drum marks that were corroded in the ground where the Agent Orange once stood, which now as an adult I'm like, I don't know about working in that bunker, but I did for 5 years. and I loved it. We had a blast, and we got to educate people on how to recycle from all over the world, all these international students who don't have recycling in their home countries or just aren't familiar with it, and then all these, you know, Californian students that just also don't know about recycling or composting. And so it's kind of like a way to teach the masses, like, hey, the world is, you know, in a tough spot, but this is one small thing we can do to help it.
Now, I would assume that, was that run by the city or by the state?
University of Oregon has their own processing plant and facility. They're one of the few schools in the nation that does that.
Okay, so I would assume then that you were making good money doing that job compared to stacking grocery in grocery bags or whatever.
You know, Karen, she started this program when she was a student at the University of Oregon, and so she made a commitment to always paying a little bit above minimum wage. But by no means was I raking in the cash in college. And
okay.
I mean, it's a very dirty job, you know. And we're in a military bunker made out of aluminum, so it's cold or it's hot. There's bees and wasps. You know, we did compost, which is like rotting food. And so, you know, imagine just sorting thousands of pounds of rotting food in the hot sun, and there's bees everywhere. And I mean, it was a very gross job, but it was an amazing opportunity to practice leadership and camaraderie. And when you're in the trenches like that with a group of people, you become like a family. And we really were.
So did you work nights?
No, it was just a daytime. Well, I think our facility closed at maybe 7 or 6. You're really pushing my memory here, and it wasn't even that long ago. But I just, my favorite part was teaching people how to recycle, and like we would find the weirdest stuff. I mean, I found a crow's head that had been severed with something blunt, I don't know what, but then they put the dead bird's head in a glass jar and they recycled the glass jar. And I remember seeing it and like having to empty the head out of the jar and put that head in the compost and then put the jar in the recycling. And it was just like, what was going on here, college kids? You know, what were you guys up to this weekend?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you know, a dead bird isn't, you know, we've all seen them.
Yeah, but to cut off the head and put it in a glass jar.
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
So did you have a big graduation ceremony at college? Did you go?
You know, it's funny. I'm the first in my family to graduate from college with a 4-year degree, and I did not even go to my graduation because I was already in my graduate program. So before my senior year had even finished, I was already enrolled in and pursuing my master's certificate in education.
To do what?
Teach 8th grade English.
Okay.
I wanted to be in service to my country and give back. And I didn't want to join the military, so I chose to teach because I think that's a really noble and incredible thing that we need in America. No one wants to be a teacher, so we have a teaching shortage in this country. So I was recruited to go do that.
And where did you go do that once you
first
had your master's?
Well, first in Tulsa, Oklahoma for my training, which was amazing. I fell in love with it's like kind of the South but kind of the Midwest. And then I went to Colorado to actually teach, Southern Colorado.
What part?
Pueblo. It's 2 hours south of Denver.
Oh, yeah. I've been there.
You have? For what?
Oh, my wife and I, we take motorcycle trips through the mountains in October.
Oh, wow. That must be amazing.
And don't get caught at a high elevation at night on a motorcycle.
That's freezing.
It's cold. Yeah. Unbelievable. But the story's about you. So you taught eighth graders, and
yes.
When you think eighth graders, you think, wow, they're Well, they're eighth graders.
Yeah, they're hormonal. They're
that's what I'm trying to say.
Oftentimes angry. You know, I was working with some really incredible students that were facing challenges that we could never even imagine. You know, the county I was in has 27 prisons in it. So a lot of families will move to that county because they have a relative in prison there and they want to be able to more easily visit them. You know, it had a 20% high school graduation rate. So just a tough group, but such loyalty. You know, like once I won their hearts, boy, would they go to bat for me. And at the same time, it was extremely challenging because it's so much more than a teacher could ever be. You know, these kids need housing, or they need stable parenting, or they need clothing. And they need a lot more than I can give them in 1 hour a day of English. You know, and then with the standardized testing, you're very limited in what you can do. You know, it's a lot of reading out of a textbook and then testing them on the comprehension of what you read. And it's tough.
To meet the administrative needs.
Yeah.
To get the equivalency that you need in regards to the dollars per student.
Exactly. I mean, we've created a monster. There's no point in placing blame because we've all done it with how we voted. You know, we voted for people that chose to create laws that make education what it is today, which is we're rated like in the bottom 50% worldwide. I mean, for me, I'm like, we are the richest country in the world. We should have the best education, but we don't. And it's about the structure we've created. You know, the money, the resources are there. We're in the land of abundance, but we're just not allocating them right. And the kids are just being tested, and then there's no creativity, and then they're not engaged, and then they're skipping school, and then they're doing drugs, and you know, we know where that goes. So I did my year. I gave to my country, and then I was like, time for me to be in a position to actually create some change instead of just a cog in the wheel.
How did you give to your year to the country by being a teacher in Pueblo?
Yeah, I mean,
was it
they're
a government?
The future.
Was it a reservation or what?
It was working for the public school system.
Okay.
There. And I mean, you know, we know our kids are the future, right? And they need to be. We need to have teachers in there. And we need to have teachers that really care. And unfortunately, in some low income schools, they can't get teachers in there because people don't want to teach in that kind of environment. You know, I had kids doing drugs before my class and punching me and kicking me and screaming at me and selling drugs in front of my classroom and, you know, just everything you could think of, gang violence, bringing knives and guns to school, all of it. It's tough, right?
No Columbine.
No.
But there's that. I brought that up because their environment was totally different than the one that you were teaching
yeah.
in. And yet, things happen.
Oh, yeah, things happen.
So we're going to take our final break and come
right.
back and talk about Be Free and also another one called the Coaching Hour right after this timeout.
Mm-hmm. Flexion Care Suites on the campus of Three Links here in Northfield offers comfort care in a home-like environment. We provide compassionate, specialized end-of-life care to residents and families during phases of an incurable illness. We have a wonderful staff that provides the highest quality of care, supporting each resident's personal wishes. I am Susan Samuelson, Clinical Nurse Manager of Reflections. You can call me at 664-8809 for a tour of this beautiful facility.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Now that tax season is behind us, let America's Mattress and Furniture to Go and Done Us worry about your tax. Sales tax, that is. That's right, take advantage of the already low prices on quality Serta mattresses at America's Mattress, and they will pay the sales tax. Not only will they pay the sales tax, but America's Mattress will deliver your new mattress and haul away your old one. And just in case that wasn't enough, how about 12 months interest-free financing? Stop into America's Mattress and Furniture to Go in Dundas and shop great deals and have them pay your sales tax.
All right.
See store for details. Some restrictions apply.
Sounds like a plan. How about this if we bring this up? The year you were born, this was a number three song. The C&C Music Factory going to make you sweat. Better turn it down. Never know what they're going to say.
Still a classic.
All right. At 10 minutes before 11 o'clock, my guest this morning on KYMN Radio is Lakshmi, and her last name is Sylvie, is her middle name, and she has Dady as the last name. And she's very involved in her own business, and you indicated that you and your fiancé moved to Minnesota from Portland. Why?
We actually moved here from Colorado. Well, he moved here from Colorado.
Okay.
After I taught there. He started a business with his best friend called Midwest Radon. So they do radon mitigation.
Radon?
Mm-hmm.
Mitigation?
Mm-hmm.
As in lawyers?
No. So, you know, homes in the state of Minnesota oftentimes have radon in them, which is an odorless toxic gas. So his company can come in and remove that for you so that you're not exposing yourself to this toxic gas.
Okay. And you and everybody should buy a radon meter?
Actually, you cannot sell a home in the state of Minnesota without disclosing your radon levels.
Oh.
And if your radon levels are over 4 picocuries, then you have to put in a system to mitigate it.
Okay. And do you keep the office nice and
organized? Oh, they have a no girlfriends in the office policy.
Oh, okay.
I wish.
Where do they? Where's their office?
They're in St. Louis Park.
Okay. So that means he came here, his buddy evidently from Minnesota.
He's from Minnesota as well.
And they're pals, and they decide to start this company.
Mm-hmm.
And the girlfriends came with?
One of the business partners was already in Minnesota, has never really left. You know, true Minnesotans, they stay around. And then Michael just met up with him and joined the business. And then I was in Portland helping my family with some things and then came out when that was all resolved.
Everything come out okay?
Yeah, it was good. It was just helping my brother get out the door for college, you know.
Oh,
my mom said if he'd been her first kid, he would have been her last because the amount of energy it takes to raise a boy was harder than three girls, apparently.
Well, you weren't a problem at all. You were hardly around.
Yeah.
So when your fiancé, Bob, is it? Bill?
Mike.
Okay, so when Mike says, hey, I'm going to go to Minnesota, what do you think? And did you ever hear of Minnesota?
Well, we'd come for Christmas, so I'd been to visit his family.
Okay.
We've been together 5 years now.
Oh.
Which, when you're 26, feels like a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so I was familiar with it. I was really nervous about the cold. And I kept saying, I don't know, man, it's really cold there. But I've actually learned to really love it. I love the people. Like, once you get into their hearts, they are your best friends. They are ride or die there for you. It's just breaking through that Minnesota ice.
really? And so, and then, of course, had you ever, while you were in Portland growing up, have you ever heard of Minnesota?
Only, you know, Minnesota, like jokingly. Like, yeah. I think on the East and West Coast, we don't really talk about the Midwest except for, like, the flyover states. You know, there's this really pompous attitude on the coasts about, like, well, you only need the East and West Coast. You know, what's even in the middle? But
yeah.
I've learned to love it. I love the lakes. I love that it's sunny all the time, even when it's 10 degrees out. It's very deceiving. I still walk outside in T-shirts in the winter, and I'm like, wait. Sunshine does not mean warm.
Yeah. So let's talk about your business again, the Be Free. What is it?
Be Free is coaching and organizing for businesses and individuals. So helping people integrate all parts of themselves and their lives in a really cohesive fashion.
And so you bid jobs. You don't actually say, by the way, my hourly rate is such and such.
I mean, I can. I meet every client where they're at. But as we know, change takes time. So if you really want to change or do something different or have different results in your life, it's best to do, you know, it's like going to the gym. If you go to the gym once, you're not going to be fit forever. If you have one coaching session, it's not really going to make a huge difference. It's something to do regularly for a certain period of time, and then you can actually monitor, track, and see that change.
Be Free.
Be Free.
How do I find that on the internet?
You can go to the letter B, the word free, so B-F-R-E-E, today.com. BeFreeToday.com.
BeFreeToday.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now you joined up with another group called the Coaching Hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Coaching Hour is for solopreneurs. So people that have businesses with either under 10 people. And it's all about, you know, helping support the freelancers and the solopreneur community in getting to that six-figure mark. So taking business owners to the next level, whatever that looks like for them.
When you say solopreneur, who made that up?
I believe it was Jason Jones, but I don't know. Jason Jones is the founder of the Coaching Hour.
Okay.
I'll have to ask him about the history of that word, but I absolutely love it. As a solopreneur myself, I could instantly, I get it, and I know the struggles of being an entrepreneur. And what I love about the Coaching Hour is it's very methodically walks you through each component of business and teaches you how to thrive in it.
Now, it sounds like that might be something that would be on YouTube.
The information is out there, but again, people they need accountability. They need structure, right? It's like we could technically just read a book about math and be good at math, but we don't, right? But if we have a math class, then we'll do it.
So you just said you're 26 years old,
mm-hmm.
and you have a boyfriend named Mike,
mm-hmm.
and you've been with him for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and you followed him to Minnesota.
You got it.
And you started your own solopreneur business,
mm-hmm.
and also joined Coaching Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have children?
Not yet, no. My goal is to own a home and be in a place where I could work part-time and be at home with my kids before I have them, because I just think that would be great to be with my kids.
Now, where do you and Mike live now?
We live in South Minneapolis, right by Lake Nokomis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I know that area well.
Keewaydin neighborhood.
It's my daughter went to a class, grade school up there.
Nice.
Right by Lake Nokomis. Can't think of the name of it right now. But that's a pretty part of town.
Yeah,
it's on the way to Northfield if you live on the north side of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
35 isn't very far from it, or
exactly.
Cedar.
Exactly. Cedar and 77, that's what I took to get here. So if anyone is interested in the Coaching Hour, we do a meetup group once a month at Star Bank in Eden Prairie. And it's actually this Wednesday, so 2 days from today, from 4 to 6 at Star Bank in Eden Prairie. And you can go on thecoachinghour.com to find out more. And we've also got an awesome workshop coming up on June 15th that teaches you the secrets of client attraction. So how to change your business from looking for clients to being a magnet for them and having to peel them off of you.
Well, you have confidence. I have
Thank
to
you.
Say that. It's pretty important in your line of business.
Yeah.
And things are going well, evidently.
Yeah, moving and shaking, constantly evolving. But I am so excited about working with the Coaching Hour because for myself as a business owner, what we are doing at the Coaching Hour is everything I wish someone would have told me a year ago in my business. You know, so it's really wonderful to be a part of it. And I had to, you know, blood, sweat, and tears and trek my way through it. But now with the Coaching Hour, we can help anybody's business thrive at any stage or level. And it's just, it's a godsend.
Well, I am going to end the show in just a couple of minutes. I wanted to be sure to give a shout-out about your businesses. And I wonder if there's anything else I should have asked you along the way.
Nothing's coming to mind, but I just want to thank you again. I felt really excited to be on the radio with someone that has multiple awards in radio and has been doing this for so many years. It was comfortable. It was flowing. You create amazing conversation. And I listened to your show online before I came on, and it's just really cool to see how you have people from all walks of life on here. So thanks for having me.
Well, that was unsolicited, folks, unsolicited. I appreciate that. Thank
yeah,
you very
absolutely.
Much. And I wish you a lot of luck in your two new businesses, that one that's all your own and the other one you're assisting in. And what do you think was the main thing that you learned when you met your grandmother?
My grandmother Mutti, my mother's mom. So many things, but I think the greatest one is that honesty, even if it's comes across as harsh or, you know, even rude or mean, is so much more valuable than just playing nice or not speaking your truth. So it was amazing to grow up with a woman who I could always count on for nothing but the unbridled raw truth. Whether or not I wanted to hear it, she would give it to me.
Your grandmother?
Yes.
After you discovered her?
No, I was talking about my mom's mom, my German grandmother.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's four different people, and I kind of mix them up sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. What about the grandmother from India? Love?
I mean, I think the greatest thing is that you don't need words to communicate.
Okay.
You know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we do on the radio, so I want to say thank you very much for stopping by. I really enjoyed it. Once again, her name is Lakshmi, right? And Sylvie Dady. Mm-hmm. Lakshmi Sylvie. No, let me do it again. Lakshmi Sylvie Dady.
Lakshmi Sylvie Dady.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sounds like a Christmas song.
Lakshmi Dady.
I just did a Jewish number for a Christmas song. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy.
Next 15 with the author on KYMN 1080 Radio, Northfield, Minnesota, 95.1 FM, The One.
It's time for 15 with the author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
The whole concept of dog training is broken, giving us an incomplete picture of our dogs and their behaviors. So says my guest today, Kim Brophy, in her book, Meet Your Dog, The Game-Changing Guide to Understanding Your Dog's Behavior. How many times have you or someone you know saw that puppy in the window and absolutely fell in love without considering anything more than teaching them not to do their business in the house? Kim is an award-winning certified canine behavior consultant and has developed a comprehensive framework known as LEGS. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you so much for having me.
Give our listeners a little bit of your background, and then tell us what LEGS stands for and what brought you to it.
So my background is that I have always been a dog lover since I can remember.